Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye on 94.7 The Pulse.
First up this morning on the line, we have the Minister for Indigenous Health and Aged Care and also the Member for Hasluck in Western Australia. A very good morning to Minister Ken Wyatt.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you? It's good to be on your program.
Yeah, very well indeed. Thank you very much for joining us. And lots to talk about your portfolios today. So thank you for offering to come on and tell us a little bit about what's happening. First of all, can you just explain your two portfolios, Indigenous Health and Aged Care? What are the big issues in that space at the moment?
Well, Indigenous Health is the issue of the disparity that exists in so many of the illnesses. Vaccination rates, we lead Australia across the nation, so I'm pleased with those. In terms of chronic complex conditions, rheumatic heart disease, otitis media, and a range of other issues that, because of the diversity of this country, creates challenges for me.
And what are the challenges involved with trying to provide services to Indigenous communities?
It varies. According to location, the level of access to GPs is around 47% of the Indigenous population that go to GPs. The other 57% go to Aboriginal community-controlled health services. The access to specialists and the journey through the optimum pathway in hospitals has always been an issue. And early death, we've still got to push out life expectancy to equal that of the rest of our nation.
What do you think are the challenges there? We hear a lot about closing the gap, and the statistics presented routinely are quite alarming. There's still quite a big gap, isn't there?
There is, but I think we've also got to celebrate areas where we have jewels in the crown, programs that are working, that are making a difference on the ground. And what I find with those is that they connect to families, they involve families, and that has been a game changer. And I think that we've got to do that uniformly across the nation. Most of our programs, we shape around one size fits all, and I've never believed that one size fits all. So we've really got to look at area by area, and we're looking at service gaps at the moment. We're identifying where funding is going, our transparency around our decision making. And on that basis, we'll make some better judgments. But I've formed a partnership with all of the Royal Colleges of Medicine to look at ways that they can be key players, because their members hold leadership positions in hospitals, health systems, and in health service delivery.
Now, one of the campaigns being run at the moment is the $116 million anti-smoking campaign called, I think, Tackling Indigenous Smoking. Can you just explain why the government's focusing on this particular issue?
Well, the smoking rates in Indigenous people have been historically high, and we've seen the reduction. What's great now in Australia is you can go to a restaurant and there's no cigarette smoke around you. 30 years ago, you'd be in a smoke-filled cafe. So we've had that influence on Australians, but we've not had the same level of influence on Indigenous communities. And I think some of that is historical, because people were paid in tobacco, flour, blankets, etc. But then people with stress often turn to a substance. And in this instance, for our communities, smoking has always been a factor. It's modelled, passive smoking occurs. And Tom Calmer has done a brilliant job in rolling out the program, and we've seen a tremendous reduction.
And how does the campaign work? Because governments have tried a lot to reduce rates of smoking, including, you know, olive green packets and putting all sorts of graphic pictures on packets. And also, from what I understand, cigarette packets will cost $40 by 2020. So how does this campaign approach things differently?
Well, what I know of the program, what I've seen on the ground, is the appointment of coordinators, people who roll out the program with community at the local level and with families. And they're there in situ, and they're talking people through how tobacco is harmful. But they also, and I went to one community-controlled organisation, what they did is they looked at the rates that people smoked that came to the service, and then they calculated how many cigarettes they'd smoke over a year. And one woman, when she ceased, they celebrated it because she stopped smoking 7,000 cigarettes in a year.
Hmm. and that's obviously a big saving and a big improvement to one's health. Can you tell us a bit about organ donation and what's happening in that particular area?
Well, we've had a good year in terms of 1,713 Australians have been organ and tissue recipients, and that's from 503 donors. We've also had 267 Australians also say, I'm a living donor, I want to give my kidney to my brother, sister, or somebody close to me. So we've had an increase in the number of people donating. But we've started some campaigns. We work with a local AmCal chemist in South Perth who has now put up a screen in his pharmacy, so while people are waiting, they go to the website, they have a look at the details they've got to put in, and I was talking to him last night, and he's had a significant number sign up to become organ donors just in that pharmacy, so we're going to try and partner with the Pharmacy Guild to roll it out across Australia. The National Rugby League are coming on board, so is the AFL, and the Football Federation of Australia is also becoming a partner, and we did an incredible launch with them just recently. And a local government in Perth, the City of Swan, said, count us in, we'd like to do something. So they've launched a campaign, and they're going to send out in their rate notices information about becoming an organ donor and how easy it is for people just to put in Donate Life on their phone. Up comes a screen that will ask them to put in their Medicare number, the item number that they are on their Medicare card, their first and last name, their address, postcode, and then whether they want to receive an email, and they just send. It's as easy as that.
And also you've got to have a bit of a conversation with your family, don't you, if you wish to donate organs, just so that they know how to make the right calls, obviously in an end-of-life scenario.
That's critically important, because what we've found is where people had the discussion with their family and expressed their desire, 9 out of 10 families honour that desire and commitment. We've got to understand that in a time of absolute grief, some people just don't want to think of that. And that's why some families will say no, even though they know that their loved ones wanted to donate. But later on, I've had a couple who've said to me, I wish we'd honoured his or her wishes. So it is a tough time, but if a donor wants to have their organs and tissues made available to others, they've really got to stress that, the importance of their decision to their family.
Do we have stats as to what percentage of Australians are on the organ donor registrar?
No, because that's changing, and once we have them, because of these campaigns, and I'm going to wait till after the major campaigns that we've got with the league clubs and with the sporting groups and with local governments, as that evolves, then we'll go back and have a look at what the increase has been based on last year's figures.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us about aged care and that portfolio, which is the other portfolio that you hold? Is there a connection between that and Indigenous health, or are they really two separate and completely separate portfolios?
They're two distinct portfolios. I love both portfolios, but I like aged care in particular because there's so much being done. The reforms that came after Richard Marles and the Living Longer, Living Better legislation put in place. But we've built on that and we've extended the opportunity for people to receive their package and then make their choice. Because in the past, the money used to go to the aged care providers and you'd have to hunt around and find a provider that would take you. This way, the packages now goes to the individual and they can shop around. So it changes to an empowerment of individuals. Excuse me.
And yeah, obviously that's a good thing, having the empowerment of individuals, and you know, we see a lot of this in, for example, the NDIS. But are there people that are on hand to help guide people through that process? Because sometimes when people haven't been used to making choices in the past, lots of choices can be quite overwhelming at times.
They are, but we've also got My Aged Care Portal, which people can go into. We've still got some teething problems because it's only 2 years old, but it's been very effective in guiding people to some of the choices that they want to make. But there are also, within communities, non-government organisations that also are supporting people make those decisions. because not everybody has a family, and the other issue is people with low levels of literacy need help.
Yeah. Now, from what I understand, you are currently seeking consultation on the increasing choice in home care reforms. Is that right?
Yes, we are. We had the David Tune review, and that's finalised now, so David will be handing down his report. I have the Oakden review, which I'm looking at the standards and what went wrong from the Commonwealth perspective in terms of what we were responsible for, so we can make sure that we don't have this situation happen again. And then on top of that is the Senate Inquiry report, which looks at workforce. So there's a number of reviews that are in train at the moment that I will now go through and work with the sector and with consumers about how do we make it better than what it is, or how do we improve some things that need improving.
Just last of all, in summary, what do you think is sort of the biggest challenge that we have to overcome in the aged care space at this time?
Not having the earlier discussion. I had a radio caller when I was on a local radio station here who said, I didn't know what it required until I had to put my mother into aged care. And he said it was an emotional situation. My mum didn't want to go. He said I knew that she was frail. And he said I was torn between disobeying my mother but knowing that I needed to help. So we really have to start having conversations as parents much earlier about what we want when we go into aged care, so that our children understand our wishes and carry them through. So there's a parallel between all of the work that I do in terms of having early conversations and planning. And that is absolutely important in the journey that we have to take. The second thing is we've got to think that we are no longer old at 60. We are living to 100, and we've got to think about 100 years of living. And changing that mindset is going to be challenging.
Lots of challenges ahead. Well, Minister, thank you very much for joining the program this morning and for giving us those overviews of those two portfolios. Greatly appreciated.
Mitchell, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you, Minister Ken Wyatt there, also member for Hasluck in Western Australia.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.